The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
A crystalline, gorgeous day in the bluegrass. Keeneland open today. Kentucky hosting LSU tomorrow night at Kroger Field, and everybody here is fired up. And there's basketball around the corner as well. Let's continue here with more guests. So we just had Mark Stoops on about 30 minutes ago, and it was a fantastic conversation with him. And let's get back to your calls at 855-242-7285. Sean, right here in Lexington. Hello, Sean.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing? I'm from Chicago.
I'm sorry.
LSU game. I have a quick question for you. What do you think about University of Kentucky upset alert?
I think it's possible. Listen, when you're playing, this is a quintessential sandwich game. For those who don't understand, that has nothing to do with food. It means you're sandwiched in between two huge games. LSU would be big anyway. Yeah. But you know Florida and Georgia next week. It's a psychologically a very tough spot, and I think you heard Mark Stoops reference that earlier.
Yeah. What do you think about Max Johnson and the offense beating Kentucky? You think they have the capability to do so?
Yeah, I mean, I think they do. And you know, LSU is a really hard team to figure out. They've got talent on that team, and you know they just seem to have these cold spells, and they had that game won last week. Let's be real. They let Auburn back into the game, which is really not the way you're supposed to do it. Hey, thanks for the call. Let's continue next with Cole, who is up next. Hey, Cole.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. So, I'm a big Georgia fan. I was wondering what you think needs to go right or what they need to do to have a shot and win the national championship this year, maybe beating Alabama in the SEC championship or something like that.
Well, you know, here's the problem for Georgia. They are clearly the best defense in the country. They have some issues at offense only because, you know, they haven't really they haven't quite found what they need offensively because of the quarterback injury to JT. So Stetson Bennett is great, but I don't want to take anything away. He won a big game last week, but I don't think he's going to beat Alabama. We already know that. We saw that game last year. So I think they have to get JT back, and I think they will. And Kirby Smart's taking his time. And why wouldn't you? I mean, with a defense like that, you've got a lot of chips in your back pocket. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for calling. Rob is in Tennessee here as we continue on a Friday afternoon. Hey, Rob.
Hello, Mr. Paul. How are you this evening, sir?
We are really doing great. Thank you.
Great. We're getting ready to watch the Vols play. Hopefully we can put another 45 or 50 on the board. Never would have thought that earlier in the year. I would have been happy with 25. But the reason I was calling, I just wanted to throw a couple things out, and it's probably crazy. But, you know, you look at the two teams that are going to be in, you know, everybody's picked to be in the SEC championship, Georgia and Alabama. But I was just kicking around some of the ideas of possibly, you know, what if there's a crazy, crazy upset? And, you know, it has to be that. But, you know, you have Kentucky lurking right there with Georgia. Georgia still has to play Florida, and you have Alabama, who Auburn and Alabama play. Alabama has to play Arkansas. Do you see either one of these teams slipping at all? I mean, we know how bad upsets can happen, but
I'm going to give you two answers here. If you go back to July and said, find me two games Auburn could lose. Two games Alabama could lose. Two games Georgia could lose. In the Alabama front, I would have gone A&M first, and Florida second, and then probably Auburn third. With Georgia, I think you would have had to start with Florida. I think that goes without. I mean, I'm saying past Clemson. I'm talking about SEC games. Because Clemson was certainly a game they could have lost. And after that, Auburn. So I think Georgia plays one of its toughest tests tomorrow. And the one game I never thought much about for Georgia was next week against Kentucky. But just think about this for a second. By the way, that Tennessee game could also be a little more dangerous because I think Tennessee, you know, possibly could get on a roll here. But who would have thought, though, that Georgia-Kentucky this year, I know some Kentucky fans thought this, would be a critical game. And if Kentucky gets out of here tomorrow night, that game takes on gargantuan proportions. Now, the question that everyone has, can Kentucky manufacture points against Georgia? That's fair. But Georgia will be playing a really good defense, too. And, you know, I'd take Kentucky over some of the defenses they've seen so far. So I don't want to get too far ahead. Mark Stoops will get mad. But there's a real there's some real possibilities.
You know, if Kentucky, being a Tennessee fan, if Kentucky could get by Georgia, you know, they've got a pretty easy road for the most part. You know, Georgia would still has to play Florida, and we just don't know which Florida team that's going to show up.
Yeah, it's hard it's hard for me to really buy into Florida in that game right now. I mean, they are a good team, but Florida is not elite, or at least they aren't right now. So I thank you for the call. I really do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. We have Roman Harper coming up here in just a few minutes. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Let's take a break. We've already had Mark Stoops on. We have Roman coming up, Tebow, many more guests as we continue. We are live at the University of Kentucky.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
I'm trying to come over to keep this segment from blowing up the internet like it did last week.
I like to rattle the cages, Paul. You know that, and I kind of enjoy doing that. That is why I love coming on your show, because there's no better time to rattle the cages or who's listening. And when you want to get a point across, don't do it on SEC Nation Saturday morning. No, come on the Paul Feinbaum Show and say what you need to say then.
And nobody comes back at you here. We do the
helicopter
down. You are the guest. So let's talk about here first. We just had Mark Stoops on, and he talked about you got to turn the page. But you understand, how tough is it when you've done something your school really has never done before to turn that page?
It's hard in the fact the fans haven't let it go.
No.
So it's really hard for you to tell the players in that locker room to turn the page, hey, we got to move on to the next opponent. When everywhere they go during class, everywhere you go outside of that football locker room, everybody's congratulating you, patting you on the back, telling you how great you are and what's next to be accomplished. They're all forecasting. They're all saying, you know, SEC champs. They're all saying these other things. But the most important game is the next game in front of you. And we all know LSU is a very viable opponent. That LSU, look at them per player, talent by talent. They're just as good or better than Kentucky. It's all about putting it all together and executing, and that's the one thing that's been missing for LSU versus for Kentucky when the most opportune times have happened. Kentucky, more often than not, has executed and made the big play to win their game.
It's too easy just to say what's wrong with LSU.
That is
easy. But, I mean, for these fans here who are, you know, getting deep into the numbers, at least trying to figure out what the number will end up. What would you say about LSU right now? We've seen them for 5 weeks. They have been erratic. At times they've been good, mostly pretty average, though.
They beat a really good Mississippi State team that's all of a sudden seems a lot better. And so that's their big win. And I was going to come on your show, Paul, and it's easy to, like you said, it's easy to jump on Ed Ogeron right now because everybody else is piling on. So that's an easy win.
Easy.
How about let's try and defend him? 2 years ago, they won a national championship. They have a mass exodus, all right, from all the players that left, coaches on both sides of the ball. He comes in. He has COVID last year, the COVID season last year. He brings in two different coordinators. It does not work. And now you got two more coordinators there. And how is that really going? Have we given them enough time to really replace all the players that they left? The coaching staff, have they all found out to be what's the best, what works best for them? Also, Miles Brennan, losing him at the beginning of the year. Let's not just walk over that as well. I thought he was going to be the starting quarterback because of his arm strength, his leadership, and that he's been around that program. He's seen Joe Burrow and what it took and when they won a championship versus where they're trying to get to now. I thought he would be another vital part, a really big part in that. And they're just struggling. They can't block anybody. They can't run the ball. I think they're dead last in college football in running the football. And they have to find different ways to be creative offensively. You can't just throw slant routes to Kayshon Boutte and think you're going to beat every team because eventually he's not going to be open. So who do you go to after that? And the offensive line not protecting the quarterback has not looked good. They need to find a way to maybe go back under center where everybody said LSU, that's all they could do for so long was under center, power game. I think they may need to get back to that just a little bit more just to alleviate some of the pressure. And it's so much easier as an offensive lineman to be better at blocking when you're going forward versus going backwards.
So big game tomorrow. They have Alabama down the road. They have pretty much everyone.
They do. Florida, all their
Arkansas, Ole Miss, A&M. How do you correct that?
You know, Paul, that's the answer that I don't have. And when I look at that schedule, and you guys can pull it up, is where do the wins come at for LSU? All right, you got Kentucky this weekend. You have Florida at home, which Florida, if they don't figure out their quarterback situation, that could be a game that could be very winnable, but they're going to be a motivated team because of the shoe game and the shoe incident last year. Then you go on the road to Ole Miss, at Alabama, that's no cakewalk. Arkansas is a lot better team than what we initially thought. And by that point, is Coach O even around? Is Coach O even there to make these decisions? And we know the athletic director, Scott Woodward, is all about big-name hires. That's what he does everywhere he's been. Going all the way back to when he was at Texas A&M, he brought in Jimbo Fisher. He brought in Coach Mulkey for the LSU women's team. He likes big-name hires, and you can't tell me that. And he didn't hire Ed Ogeron either. Those are all signs that don't point to good things for Ed Ogeron. All you can do is control what you can control, which is winning the next game. If you win, it heals everything. People, all the haters, and everybody.
It's funny, after they beat Mississippi State, nobody was talking about it.
That's what I'm saying. If you win, everything's all right. You have to win ball games. And winning 7-8 games is no longer good enough for LSU. They want more than that because you can't show everybody we're recruiting in the top 5 every year. And no matter who leaves or goes. Yeah, they are. You're getting top 5 recruiting classes every year. And no matter who leaves or goes, they still produce. And they still want those guys to develop and still show out and show wins at the end of the year.
So, Roman, every day, a couple of minutes ago, one of the top players in the country just made a commitment to school close to your heart. this is the time the players are deciding what they're going to do. And, you know, talking about great recruiting classes, while all the hullabaloo is being created about Ed O, what can he and his staff tell high school recruits right now while this is playing out? They can't tell them everything's okay, can they?
Well, if you did, you're lying to them. And I mean, that's okay, but you're going to tell them that it's okay. You don't want them to know that there's any leaks in the boat.
I've never lied to high school players before.
Never lied, at least not to my face, right? So I'm cool with that, telling them what they need to hear, because you got to do whatever it takes to get them on your campus. And then once you get those players there, how do you develop them? How do you get them to the next state? It's not just about getting a five-star on your campus, but does that five-star end up going in the first round? And then you show that track record where, hey, these are the things that we're doing. I went to Alabama's, you know, and I hate to brag on Alabama because there's such a standard and it's easy to say. But when you go into that locker room and you see all those bulletin boards of all the awards, the first rounders, and you can relate to, hey, this was a five-star from your state that came to the state of Alabama and became an NFL player. And if that's your goal, it's more obtainable when you see it in front of you. And LSU has put multiple guys in the NFL. But the last time I checked, the defense has not looked good in 2 years. They're not playing well, so they have to get these things fixed. And when I'm watching the tape, Auburn, all they did was put people in motion and guys were confused. So when I see guys pointing and not knowing what to do, did they not practice those things? We have to hunker down on the little things, stop being so exotic, and really dumb it down and say, if one guy moves, only one person has to adjust. We don't need three guys adjusting. I think the coaches have to learn how to coach, and the players have to learn how to play for those coaches. And if you do that, you can get a really good product at LSU. We've seen it before, Paul.
Yeah, but we're heading to the sixth game of the season. It's hard to make adjustments while you're running on a treadmill.
And it didn't look like he had the heart and the motivation of that team last year. Last year was a really bad LSU team. And most teams don't come from a national championship and then lose as many games as they did. I don't care, it was an all-SEC schedule. You still have to win games if you're LSU. And this year, they have a lot of the same symptoms really showing back up. Defensively, they're not getting the stops that they want. Really small or little details in the offensive game plans are working versus LSU. If I'm Kentucky, I'm looking at everything that's been going on the last 2 weeks, and I'm implementing all of that into my game plan. I know Liam Cohen's a really good play caller, and he's designed some really good plays and the motions and different things that they like to do and brought in from the Rams. Seems like it would be a really good idea to break a lot of those things out versus LSU.
Talking to Roman Harper, we're live at Lexington. So let me ask you about the Kentucky Wildcats.
Let's go.
It seems like they never get credit. No matter what they do, they've kind of slogged their way through the season. Missouri was shouldn't have been close. South Carolina was really much closer than it should have been.
Yes.
Agree with me.
And Chattanooga was way too close.
Yeah. So, you know, they finally and they beat Florida, but, you know, of course, Dan Mullen did out coach Mark Stoops, is what I heard. So they maybe deserve to. What is this Kentucky team all about?
Number one, I think the home field advantage is real in Kentucky. The fans really get behind their players. And that's one of the first things. I'm trying to play up to the crowd here.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first thing that jumped out on the tape to me was how many times Florida jumped off sides. And that's all because of the fans. The offensive line was not ready to handle it. And next thing you know, you get a little momentum. They blocked the field goal. And that was really the game changer. Other than that, Kentucky didn't do much. They did not look good. And they have to fix that. And I'm wondering, do they have anything else in the tank? Can you find another gear offensively to still look explosive at times? Because right now their offense is severely sputtering and going downhill from game to game. They have to have an uptick because LSU's going to score. You just don't know how many points they're going to be able to score.
Roman Harper is with us. We have many, many more guests. We've already had Coach Mark Stoops. When we come back, we're going to talk to Roman about the game of the year in the SEC in College Station tomorrow. Ooh, I'm reading an old script. I'm sorry. We're going to find out what Roman thinks of Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We're back. We're in Kentucky on a Friday afternoon. And we want to talk to Roman Harper about the game in College Station tomorrow night, particularly Jimbo Fisher. We all know Jimbo got an extension.
Big extension, Paul.
A big extension.
Big.
We were trying to figure out. It was a $75 million contract. Now it's like, now he's making, he's on the Fortune 500 list just on his salary alone. It's about a $90 million deal.
Over the stretch of like 10 years.
Yeah, and I think it's guaranteed. Oh, I know it's guaranteed. I mean, they fire him tomorrow. Here's $90 million.
Yeah.
That's like NFL cornerback money, isn't it?
Yes, it is, over 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And he's able to get it for coaching and making those decisions where his quarterback has struggled. And you just got to call a spade a spade. You know, Jimbo Fisher is supposed to be the quarterback whisperer, and his quarterback is really struggling. And they're not playing up to snub or up to par to anything. Kyle Zotta missed a lot of passes last weekend. How do you formulate offenses to get him going? Whatever that may be, but you have to have a quarterback to be comfortable to execute an offense. And right now the offense that you're running is not working. The offensive line's not protecting. You're not getting the run game out of your two running backs that are really good running backs, but they're not happening. And the wide receivers are not getting open. So you have a lot of question marks if you're Texas A&M that you want to see answered. And I'm not thinking you're going to beat Alabama, but you need to make it close. And you need to lean on that fans and have them going. But if this thing gets ugly early, Texas A&M has no chance to win this game. Did I say it right?
You said exactly what I was thinking. So if I forced you, I said, okay, you have the class project is you have to tell me that I'm telling you the end result. And you tell me how they do it. Texas A&M wins this game.
Oh, that means somebody from Alabama got hurt, and the backups did not play well.
There's one guy that you don't want to see get hurt.
Right, and I'm not even going to put it in the air like that. So, you know, and then they turned the football over. A&M had a big play or a return game, touchdown, things like that, something that you just don't normally see. Because when you – and, Paul, before the season started, I was the one that said A&M was going to be favored in this game.
Yeah.
I thought it was at home, Kyle Field, A&M coming off the great season that they had last year. They would just kind of keep that momentum rolling. Offensively, they would look the same and still pound on the guys and still run the ball efficiently. And it's completely opposite going into it. Alabama looks a lot better. They're coming off one of their best performances as a team performance that I've seen them play since last year. And they're a team that's motivated, especially last week. But do you come in sleepwalking a little bit, kind of, you know, reading the newspaper clippings? I haven't seen if Nick Saban's gone off in the media yet this week.
He's been quiet.
Exactly, which is a little scary. So is he going to have his guys going? Like I know he did last week, and everybody led up to it, Lane Kiffin versus Nick Saban. But Jimbo Fisher is an opportunity here. Is he going to prove that he's as good as his contract says he is? Or are we going to have more question marks? Because – you look at the past coach that was there in front of me at the same point, and everybody's talking about that stat. He has more wins than Jimbo does at the same very point.
And to Kevin Sumlin's credit, wherever you are.
He beat Alabama, too.
Exactly. That was my point. He didn't just beat Alabama. He won in Tuscaloosa.
Yes. And next you know, and they got a Heisman with Johnny Manziel. They really, really just shocked the world that year. You had Mike Evans come out, who's a great NFL player right now. So, that team under Kevin Sumlin did some things that we have not seen under Texas A&M, and we're waiting for Jimbo to do those same things, especially when you give him the contract extension. When you give him the money, you're looking for certain return on your investment and certain results at the end of the year, and right now Texas A&M is not paying up. Well, the football team's not paying up on their side of it.
Here's a problem for Kevin Sumlin. You mentioned Johnny winning the Heisman. He had another Heisman winner there that left to go win the
Kyle
Heisman
Murray.
Somewhere else.
Yeah. He did. He did great at recruiting, but he didn't keep any of the players.
Right.
And right now, Jimbo's doing a great job of recruiting, and some of the players opted out last year. Well, the players there on your campus right now, how do you get the best out of them? Weidemeyer's a great tight end. They got to find ways to continue to get him the ball. Anaya Smith on the outside is a really good slot receiver. You got to find ways to get him the ball creatively and not just saying, hey, we're going to run these plays, and then I want my quarterback to get him the ball. Go out of your way to force feed these players, your most explosive players, get them the ball. That's the only chance you have at winning this game.
You're sitting out there, waiting for Alabama. Yeah, I think people say things about Nick Saban, and you really don't know whether it affects him or not. So last, I think it was in June, Jimbo goes to the Houston Touchdown Club, and he's going to kick Saban's ass.
Yeah, spouts out a little bit. And, you know, at that point in time, he believed that.
Okay.
He really, truly believed that. And so did the fans. But I don't think they believe that wholeheartedly right now.
I mean, Saban brushed it off, but.
Well, you don't worry about the little people when you're on top of the mountain.
Do those things matter?
I think it does matter, Paul. It does. When I was at Alabama and these words that came out that Nick Saban and that LSU team had been spouting off about Dennis Franchione and what we had done at Alabama and all the penalties and all those things. And we came into Baton Rouge and we had it up on every locker, bulletin board material. You hear about it. And it does work, especially
when you guys won big.
Yeah, we won big, really big. So when you talk about bulletin board material, you do get to use that as ammo later on in the year. And when other motivating factors are not there, that is something you can pull out and say, hey, this is what they think about you when you're not around. Take that and use that, because at the end of the year, at the end of the game, we're going to show them what we think about them now after these words have been said, because eventually you got to kick the ball off and you got to play the game. So all the words that you say before the game doesn't really matter until you after you kick the ball off, but it is a good motivating factor when other things are not there. I think it will be used.
I want to know this, because it's every time somebody says something, oh my goodness, that's going to be bulletin board, blah, blah, blah. You were a great player. I mean, at what point does that factor in? And people always say once it kicks off, you just almost said the opposite. You're a great player. Does it really change the way you play?
Paul, you see, I'm sitting up because, yes, when it's personal, when I would go one-on-one with a player and he would say something in the news, like I'll give a great example. Vernon Davis said something years ago when I was playing against him in the NFL. He was with the 49ers. And when they knew I was going to be guarding him majority of the time, and then in the newspaper I read an article that says, and they showed it to me, my coaches did, because they know I get mad, was that, oh, I don't even know who that guy is. Oh, now it's personal. So now I'm going out of my way to make sure you're going to remember who I am today. And those are the things that motivate a person, a highly competitive person.
What would you do to make sure he remembered you?
Oh, number one, I went and saw him before the game, and then I got in his face, and we almost got into it. And
really?
And then once the game started, I made sure if I tackled him, I wouldn't just let him up easy. And I'm going to make sure I get a little.
I'm intrigued by this. So before the game.
We always go off the rails. Ready.
You seek him out.
Yes.
I mean, do you know him?
No. I'd met him in the offseason previously before that, so we knew each other.
Okay, so you see him on the field.
Yes.
Pick up the story.
The Saints had gone off to the locker room, and I was waiting. And I knew eventually the 49ers were going to come off the locker room, so I'm waiting on him. So I wait for him to come towards his locker room, and Sean Payton said he saw me, like, and I was just standing there, and he's like, this may be something. So he circles back.
He knew you.
He knew me. So he circled back. And then when Vernon came over there, I went and approached him and was like, yo, what's up? So you don't know my name? So you don't know me now? And I'm like, oh, you know, a couple choice words. You're going to know me, blah, blah, blah. And then they separated me. My boy Malcolm Jenkins grabbed me and separated me, and then a couple of his players. And Vernon was kind of shocked because he was like, dude, I was kind of just playing to the media, and I didn't think it was playing. So it's something to be said when you got one person that's playing around and the other person taking it serious.
I mean, I'm not like I've ever – you know, being a
I'm not that type of person,
you know,
either, Paul.
Being a top defensive back in the NFL, but does it? I'm questioning your judgment because to me, it seems like it would make more sense to wait to hold that in your back pocket rather than to let him know you're coming. So you wanted him to know you're coming.
No, I was always taught to swing first, Paul.
Okay,
so I was ready to go before the game. I would have swung on him right there if he would address me wrong. So I was ready to take the penalty, the fine. I didn't care at that point. All I saw was red, and I saw 85, and I was ready to go handle what I said I was going to do. And I knew I'd made that decision the night before, and I had done things like that in my career to other things where I'm not going to apologize for competing. And I had the coaches that backed me up on it, and they always said, you know, we'll do certain things as a team. And I had my boys there with me, and I was ready to go. So I didn't care at that moment. I know if the worst thing that could happen, it wasn't like I was going to get kicked out of the game. I mean,
they hadn't started yet.
Yeah, they hadn't even started. So I'll get fined. I'll take that. That wasn't anything. That's a tax write-off anyways.
So how'd the game go?
We actually won that game. It was a Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night game. We won that game last minute. I made a nice play at the end of the game to kind of deflect the pass before we went to overtime.
How did he do?
I didn't really allow him to do anything that game. I think he had an okay game. He had a better game in the playoffs when they actually beat us to lead up, which then they lost to the Giants. But
were you guys good after that?
We were good, yeah. We've been good ever since that time, and we actually had some stuff out after the game. But, yeah, we were good.
So after the game, was still going on?
Well, yeah, because during the game, I'm saying every known four-letter word in the book.
You're holding nothing back.
I'm holding absolutely nothing back. And when I got him down, I told you, Paul, I'm not going to let him up. I got an elbow and using him to get up and, pushing his face mask down a little bit. You got to do those things because, look, in the NFL, man, it's in between those white lines, the only advantage you have as a defender is fear. So anytime I can strike fear in another man's mind or have him thinking about anything but catching the ball or executing, then I'm doing my job. And I'm going to continue to do that even more and more until I get him completely out of his game. And that's the mental edge that you got to play, because when nobody cares about how much money you're making or what draft pick you are once right. The game kicks off. It's all about what you're doing in between those white lines and in between those whistles. And I'm just trying to get every advantage I can. So I'm talking to him. I'm talking bad to him. I'm talking crazy. And whenever he's not looking, I'm pushing him too.
And when the game was over,
you just let it go.
Did you guys see each other after the game?
We did. We kind of hashed it out, and I'm cool with Vernon. I've seen him since multiple times.
You finally quit the.
Yeah, once I got it out my way, I'm good. I let it go.
You're crazy.
I mean, got to have that switch, Paul. I'm not like that. I'm such a nice guy.
I do not want to upset you.
You should not, Paul. You should not upset me. And then don't try and upset me and then go play football. That's definitely not a good thing.
Yeah. If I'd have known this, I'd have never trashed you in all those newspaper columns.
See? Oh, now we can really talk about it, because that's when you were really trashing Alabama.
I was.
That is how I knew Paul Feinbaum. He was the guy that always had some dirt on Alabama and always trashing us when we were losing. And I could just see your smile and just imagine you laughing at us the whole time you're writing this article. And now we're winning, and now you're considered a Bam. So it's amazing how time heals all wounds.
Hey, tough luck. I mean – You guys were terrible.
We were terrible. We were really bad for a long time. It's amazing. If we would have been able to score 20 points in every game my senior year, we'd have won every game. We didn't give up more than 14, 17 points a game, and we still find ways to lose it because we couldn't score. And now I look at all the offensive explosion that Alabama has, and I'm just
spoken
so
like
jealous.
A true defensive guy.
So jealous.
Correct history
so
and
jealous.
Blame the offense.
It's the truth. Our defense was good. Our offense was trash. And I love all my teammates, but we were not good, and they would probably admit the same thing.
You just called your teammates on the offensive side of the ball trash.
We were really bad.
You are one.
I'm an honest guy. I'm fair but
critical.
I like this. I'm critical but honest, and we were not good looking back on it. And we had some pretty good players, but if you don't have the team, the cohesiveness to go together with that, you got no chance at winning.
Okay.
No chance.
Next week when we have you on, we're gonna FaceTime Vernon in here and settle this.
Let's do it. I'm down. He's played for a very long time. He's a straight vertical route tight end guy, and I loved going against him. He was one of my favorite guys to go against because I knew exactly what I was going to get and how talented he was. And it's always when you're a competitor, you want to go against the best. And I love going against him. I love talking trash, and I love trying to hit him and just really get after the 49ers. It was great matchups.
The one and only, don't get on his bad side, Roman Harper. Thank you, Roman. We are coming right back. Much more to come.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Live in Lexington on a Friday afternoon, and much more to happen here as Tom Hart will join us in a couple of minutes. Let's check in right now with Taylor Davis covering Vandy and Florida. Taylor, always great to have you on these Friday afternoon shows. Good afternoon, and give us the scene set. How are you?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
I am doing well, Paul. Always great to chat with you as well. Thank you for having me. Down here in Gainesville, down in the swampland, getting ready for this one, a homecoming game for the Gators. And, coming off quite a deflating loss to Kentucky last week. And, I've spoken with several of the players and obviously the coaches this week. And it was a tough one for them, Paul. I mean, as expected, any loss is tough, especially against an East opponent, but it was the way in which they lost, 15 penalties, 8 of those false starts. We spoke with Coach Mullen today, who told us five of their drives were completely halted because of penalties. And really, for an offense that's kind of flipped its identity this year, and with Emory Jones trying to get his footing as the starting quarterback, having it halted in that way because of undisciplined football, it makes it really difficult to find efficiency on that side of the ball. So frustration is certainly prevalent. They've got to flip the script, but a homecoming game against Vanderbilt gives them a good opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and Taylor, talking to Mark Stoops earlier and just talking to everyone here in Lexington, they really feel like the crowd was responsible for a lot of those penalties. I know that's probably not something Dan Mullen wants to hear, but it will be a lot easier tomorrow. Finally, let's help us figure out the quarterback situation down there. We know Emory Jones has been fantastic, but what are you hearing in terms of expanding the reps for everyone's favorite backup?
Everyone's favorite backup. You're right, and they're clamoring to see more of him because of the star quality that he seems to have. And look, Vanderbilt expects to see him a lot. I think we could too. Emory Jones is the starting quarterback here, though, and Dan Mullen is happy with him. He says that he's really coming along, and anytime you're a first-year starter, there's an adjustment period in your preparation. How you prepare as a starter is very different than how you prepare as a backup. Coach Mullen said he really reformed himself this season after game two, having those first couple of weeks to really get those actual reps and see his role here. And even, Paul, after the Alabama loss and after the Kentucky loss, I spoke with Jones this week, who told me he's learning from each bit of this and his confidence is rising by the week. They want him to continue to grow in that by making sure it's known that he has the reins. I do think we're going to see more of Anthony Richardson. They know his ability, especially when he takes off and runs. But Coach Mullen told us there's a learning adjustment that he's in too. Fans aren't able to see it because it's, you know, in practices and meetings, but he's learning a lot with this offense. And until they feel like they're in the situation where that's where they have to go, it'll continue to be Emory, and Anthony will get work done, you know, whether it's series or just the flow of the game. I think that fans can expect to see him, but I also think they want to open up that pass game a bit more this week. And against the Vanderbilt defense that's allowing over 400 yards per game, it's a good opportunity to try it out.
Taylor, always great to hear from you. Thanks so much. We'll all be watching tomorrow. We appreciate it. Let's get back to the calls here at 855-242-7285. Tom Hart, who will be on the call here for tomorrow night's game, will join us in a couple of minutes. Cash Daniel will also be here in the next hour. Laura Rutledge as well. Let's go to Kyle in Louisville. Hey, Kyle. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing? Great seeing you again in the Bluegrass.
Thank you.
It's always is great having you back. I remember a couple of years ago when you were there for the sweep of American Pharoah winning the Breeders' Cup a couple of years ago.
I do remember that. That was fantastic.
Hey, Paul, I got a buddy of mine. We kind of go back and forth, and he's a big LSU Swamp Tiger boy, and he seems to think that this is going to be Coach O's final game tonight, and then Mark Stoops is going to be the main guy rolling into LSU next year. What are your thoughts on that?
Listen, I don't know if I believe that or not. I do think Mark Stoops is going to be in some coaching searches, but I would say LSU is a pot. I mean, listen, I'm not prepared to speculate on that job yet, but I will say this, as I said, Mark Stoops is definitely going to get some looks around the country. I don't think that should come as a big surprise to anyone. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Drew is in Virginia. Hey, Drew, go right ahead.
Oh, thank you for all you do. Quick question. I'm a huge fan of Thursday night football, and of course Saturday being the great college experience that it is, but where do you think football, college football, and who is in charge of the decision-making process of having football on Friday nights and taken away from the high school athlete?
You know what? I agree with you on that. It's ultimately television who makes those calls. There are certain leagues that can't get prime games. Now, as I say that, the Big Ten has played on Friday night. I know the ACC is playing a couple of Friday night games. I don't like it. I think high school football in this country is sacrosanct. I don't think anything should be done to take away from it. Now, you're asking me, well, why don't you go ask your bosses? They're scheduling the games on Friday night. That is true. That's not my concern, though. I'm just giving you an opinion, and I think it's too bad. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. We are heading to the break. We have Tom Hart coming up. Cash Daniels will be joining us. Laura Rutledge. Many, many more guests as we are live at the University of Kentucky.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.